Welcome to the Create Your Shape podcast. I'm Jenny, the nutritionist, and I'll be teaching you the strategy, structure, and science to build muscle and decrease body fat, specifically for ladies who work out. Hello, friends. Welcome to the Create Your Shape podcast. Today, I have my friend, Bridget Godfrey, and I met her here in Bali, but she's also our first competitor that we have had on the show, but also a WBFF pro. So we're going to talk all about what it looks like to be a competitor, what it takes to be a competitor, and dig into more about her and how she does it. So can you tell us who you are? Where are you from? What do you do?
So my name is Bridget Godfrey. Thank you for having me on, by the way. Yep. I have not done a podcast in so long, so very honored to be here. I am from Australia, Queensland, Australia.
If you can't tell.
I am an online training and nutrition coach and a professional bikini athlete. And I've actually been living in Bali for 2 years now, which is crazy. I was only supposed to come for 6 months and it has ended up being a long-term thing. So here I am still.
And to be determined on if you're staying here and what that looks like.
Yeah. Don't know yet.
I think that's kind of how everyone is. Mm. Same for us. All right. So let's get into the world of bodybuilding, because I feel like for the ladies who listen to this podcast, they have maybe heard about it. They've maybe follow some people who are bikini competitors or pros. So let's just kind of zoom out and talk about like, what is it? Because there's two different federations, Lisa. I'm sure there's more that I'm really familiar with. Mm-hmm. So just kind of zoom out and let's talk about like, what is bodybuilding and what are like the two main type of ways to compete?
So there's many different federations, tested, untested, and it just sort of depends on what you want to do with competing. Personally, for me, I've always competed with WBFF. So they are not just physique based. It's all about beauty, fashion, like, and fitness is involved, but it's more so like I like to explain it as like Victoria's Secret, but fitness.
So I love how you said Victoria's Secret, because that's exactly like, that's such a good image, because if you think about the wings, mm-hmm. and the bikinis that have like sparkles on them and the big hair and like strappy sandals, like strutting the runway, like that's what WBFF like reminds me of.
Yeah, for sure. There's a lot of fashion. Their shows are amazing and they just put on like such a, I guess, fun to watch.
It's like entertaining.
Yeah, for sure. So that's WBFF. IFBB is probably the most well-known federation, just because that's how you get to the Olympia, and that's sort of like very much more physique-based. Of course, you have to have posing, stage presence, all that kind of thing down pat, but it's more so, I guess, easy in terms of understanding the judging criteria. It's sort of straight down the line. All of the competitors, depending on what category, look very similar, because it's very clear in terms of what they're actually looking for. Mm-hmm. So that's actually what I'll be competing in next. So I'm moving away from the current federation that I'm in. Not that I don't like the glitz and glam, but I'm kind of just in a place where I want to push my physique to the best it can be and not have to worry about all of the other stuff. So, yeah, IFBB is probably the most well-known federation. And then there's ICN, which is a natural federation, and about 15 more that are very like similar to either WBFF or IFBB.
I want to say the one I did back in the day was NCA.
Okay, yeah.
Which is very, I guess, similar principles to maybe IBFF, where it's a little more like conservative. There's no like glitz and glam. It's very much physique focused, but very much like you're walking the stage. You know, there's different classes and you do the poses and then like you're judged based off of your physique. So with that too, there's a lot of classes within them. What are some of the classes? And then what is it like, how do they differ between each other?
So for females, there's bikini. This is for most of the federations. So it starts with bikini. Wellness is a pretty new category. Then it goes to fitness. I'm not too sure if it's the same with WBFF and IFBB, but then it goes to physique and figure, which is a lot more muscle. So I personally do bikini. Wellness is kind of like a step up from that. They like quite a well-developed lower body. It's quite a, I guess it's not very in proportion either what they're looking for. They like more of a bikini upper body with like a bigger lower body. That's gotcha. Kind of the idea of wellness. And then bikini, WBFF and IFBB are very different. WBFF like a softer look, so you don't get as lean and conditioned. It's more so like a toned kind of like firm, still very healthy looking bikini body.
Mm-hmm.
But there's like no real, like I guess the definition isn't as much as it would be in IFBB where you have to get extremely lean.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in saying that, it's still like an unhealthy level of body fat for a female to reach even in WBFF,
mm-hmm.
even though it's considered not lean in the bodybuilding world, it's still like an unhealthy percentage for a female.
And we're going to talk about that.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's pretty much like the female categories anyway.
And then, so I think it's good to know that there are different classes because I think sometimes people think bodybuilding and they just think of like my dad. I remember sent me a photo when I told them I was going to do a show and it was this lady who like had like, I don't know, like 20-inch biceps and just like extreme muscle. Like she looked like the Arnold Schwarzenegger back in the day, but like female. And I was like, oh, they just don't get it. They know that there's different classes and levels and all that. But there's also, it's also based on height too. There's height classes as yeah. well within each of those, right?
Yeah. So, well, bikini, no.
Okay.
Initially there is, but then you go into opens. So once you've got your pro card, everyone's all together. Mm. I'm actually not 100% with men's. I think that it could be a little bit different. I think there's weight categories for them.
Oh, interesting.
Bikini opens is like all together.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So let's kind of just give an overview of a high-level timeline. I remember being like, how long does this take to do one of these shows? Like, do you have to prepare like years in advance? Which I guess once you're at, you know, a high level, yes. But it just kind of zooming out and being like, what is the high level of, okay, I'm going to do a show. Like, what does the prep look like? Then how do you prepare? Then mm-hmm. show day?
So, I mean, the way I started competing is very different and not something that I would probably recommend. I kind of got introduced to the competing world at the same time I did lifting weights. So my first show was 15 weeks after I first stepped foot in a gym. So I was very small, didn't have much muscle at my first show. So, I mean, everyone's journey is different, but I guess typically you'd want a fair few years in the gym first to have a foundation of muscle regardless of what category you go into
mm-hmm.
Because that's a lot of people's like, I guess, feedback, especially for first timers, is they just need more size. So, yeah, usually it's like a good amount of time in the gym. I think it's also important to have a very good understanding of nutrition before you get into a comp prep as well. And also to just understand that it's an extreme sport at the end of the day, and it doesn't really, it's not the same thing as just getting fit, healthy, and looking your best and living a healthy lifestyle. It's an extreme sport. And I think sometimes people confuse the two mm-hmm. because, lifting weights is obviously a big part of competing, but it doesn't mean that it's an extremely healthy process.
Yes, so. To go to the extremes for mm-hmm. sure. I like to say there's levels to this shit
mm-hmm.
where you can be at level 3, right? And you look fit and you're well fed and you're healthy and, you know, balanced, I'll put in quotes. And then there's level 4 and then there's level 5 and then there's 6 and 7. And like once you get up there, that's like the levels where it's, again, like you said, like it's extreme or you're taking it to the extreme for sport at the end of the day.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So kind of going back. So ideally, you have a foundation of lifting weights. You have some foundation of nutrition knowledge. And then let's say someone who is new and they're doing their first show, how long, when would they start the process? Like, say they pick a show that they want to do. Mm-hmm. How long in advance from that do they start prepping for it? Yeah.
It would all depend on, I guess, what position they're currently in. Everyone's different in terms of how much body fat they're carrying. So I think it'll just depend on how long the dieting phase has to go for. But usually it'll range from 16 to 25 weeks, mm-hmm. typically the cutting phase of a prep. I always say though, even in your improvement seasons with competing, you're still on because you have to be working towards a goal. So I guess prep is pretty much a term people use for the cutting phase of prep or of competing in general. So, probably 16 to 25. Usually my preps go for about 20 weeks on average.
Okay. So that's 4 to 6 months-ish.
Yeah.
Okay. So then you get down to, and we'll kind of break this down too, but just at a high level. Then you get down to the show, which, we've talked about nutrition and training, but posing is a whole different thing that's part of it that I feel like people don't realize. They think they just get up on stage and they just look like that. But no, it takes a lot of effort to get into those positions.
For sure, yeah. So depending on what federation, for WBFF, you actually do your own posing. So you choreograph everything yourself and you kind of just try and showcase your personality and what poses look best for your physique. IFBB, I'm very new to the posing in that federation. So I can't say I'm looking forward to learning, but yeah, it's, you have to have a decent amount of mobility. That's one thing that I don't have. So yeah, a lot of practice goes into the posing side of things for sure.
And then the last thing, not the last thing, but I guess the clear heels and the spray tans are definitely a big part of it too. So just got to touch on that, but when you're doing the posing and you're doing the walks, right, it's almost like a dance. Like you're learning choreography, but it's in these positions to show off the work that you put in. But you're doing it in heels.
Yes. Yeah. So I always say, if you're going to compete and you need to learn posing, the first thing you need to learn is how to walk in heels. Mm-hmm. Get comfortable with that first and then you can get into the posing side of things, I think. I was kind of lucky because I was obsessed with high heels when I was a little girl. So when it came to competing, I was I could run and do all kinds of crazy things in heels already. Whereas I think some people that haven't worn heels, it's very, very new for them.
Oh, so you for sure need to come to the heels dance class with me then. You're already that's 5 steps ahead.
That's why I was initially interested. I'm surely I can't be that bad.
Yeah, no, that's, I feel like half the battle. Okay, so let's talk about something you said about being in off season. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like this is such an important part that people don't realize happens. So what do you mean by an on season and an off season?
So off season is pretty much where you need to make the improvements to then come back with a better package for your next show. So it looks different for everybody just depending on what your feedback is. But for the most part, it's going to be about bringing up either certain muscle groups or just overall. And obviously with that comes a building phase, a surplus, having a little bit of additional body fat. And I guess where a lot of people go a little bit quiet because they don't look as shredded and lean as they do when they have all their photo shoots and they're in season. Mm-hmm. So I think the more advanced you get for a bikini competitor anyway, once you have the size, building phases tend to sort of turn into more maintenance phases and you're working on very minor things, whereas early days with competing, it's much more about embracing the discomfort of just being in your off season and training hard, eating hard, recovering harder, that sort of thing. So big difference off season to on season for sure.
So just crossing over to like the everyday athlete who wants to improve their physique and maybe not compete, I think kind of like you said, when you have bigger improvements to make, then the off-season and on-season, off-season may be more extreme. Mm-hmm. But also when you are competing and you're looking at it as a sport, then they also are going to be more extreme too, because you're doing everything you can to put on muscle, which you may sacrifice and put on more body fat to do that. And then come the on season, you're going to do everything you can to get leaner, even if it's not healthy, even if you're doing it quickly and may rebound after, right? So it's like, again, I'm just emphasizing that, like you said, this is a sport.
Extreme.
An extreme sport.
For sure.
But there is some overlap too at the same time. So I have my ladies, what I call is like a lifestyle phase mm-hmm. versus a dieting phase, mm-hmm. which that may somewhat overlap with the lifestyle phase being the off season, where you have more flexibility with food. You're really focused on training. You're focused on eating enough. And then the on season, when you're dieting, you have to be more accurate, more precise mm-hmm. with nutrition, and you're really focused on all the efforts going to decreasing body fat. Mm-hmm. So kind of thinking about your journey of on seasons and off seasons, how long have you been in these different seasons?
So typically I've never done a build shorter than 6 months. I mean, it's possible, but I think it's kind of it's not optimal, because you're not going to be able to put on much size in a few months' time. It's like it's such a slow process, especially for a female. So you just need that time. So 6 months is usually like how long my building phases will go for, if not longer. It just depends on like what my conditioning's like through the process. If I'm super rigid with my nutrition and it's like a very conservative, slow build, usually I don't need as many mini cuts along the way. But something to all like I always have to keep in mind is that I have to prep again. So when I do get to the, you know, prep side of things, I want to make sure I'm not too out of condition, so that fat loss phase isn't extremely hard. So usually building phases like no less than 6 months, with a few mini cuts if need be along the way. It'll be 2 years in between my last show and my next show, so this is going to be a very long build for me. Mm-hmm. But I needed it, because IFBB bikini has a lot more muscle than WBFF, what I've just come from. So it's kind of just been like my main focus through this sort of off season. And I'm so used to kind of embracing the body fat side of things now. It's like going into my fifth show, it just feels normal. Not to say it's not challenging. It's just I kind of just know that's what I need to do to get to where I want to be.
So just to kind of quantify that, do you mind sharing like as far as swings of let's say weight of when like show day to off season, and then also talking about like you've said you've kind of gotten more comfortable with that, like how have you gotten more comfortable with that? Because I know some ladies now, I'm not saying everyone needs to gain a bunch of body fat in order to put on muscle, like that's not the case for everyone. Again, if you're that lean though, right, coming off a show and you're that lean to put on muscle, then you generally will have to put on some body fat too. Mm-hmm. Most of my ladies, that's not the case, because they still have body fat to lose. However, I do have ladies who are leaner and they want to improve their body composition. Well, we're not going to focus on, you're not going to decrease body fat right away. You're going to focus on building muscle. So can you just kind of quantify maybe some numbers, and even if it's with maybe clients that you see, and then talk about how you were able to get more comfortable in that off season?
Yeah, for sure. So it's been very different for me off season to off season, because I've obviously put on muscle throughout. So it's funny. I remember back in the day, I thought any more than 55 kilos, if I weighed any more than that in my off seasons, I would be horrified. Whereas now I'm sitting at...
That's 121 pounds, just for...
I don't know pounds.
For non-kilos.
But currently I'm sitting at 74 kg, which is the heaviest I've ever been. My last stage weight
was... Just 163.
My last stage weight was 56.
which is 123. So, but keep in mind, like, for the audience, stage weight, right? Not only are you super low body fat percentage, like, you're peeled off all this water too. Mm-hmm. So that's like, I don't know, maybe another like 3 to 5 pounds or like 2-ish kilos just from that.
Yeah.
And then the lower food, all of that. So I feel like there's like a 5-ish pound area that's uh-huh. just from the like temporary stage sure. yeah. moment.
Yeah, for sure. So in kgs, I'd probably say like between 8 and, I mean, 15-ish kilos can range from anywhere between those numbers on season to off season. A lot of the time, like for me personally, I probably didn't have to get as heavy as I have done in this off season, but I've also been enjoying life a lot more.
Yeah.
Which I don't mind doing because I know how extreme prep is. And I think that if I have to embrace a little bit of extra body fat, maybe some unnecessary body fat to live life, enjoy all the foods I don't get to enjoy in prep, I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know I'm still putting muscle on in the process. So I guess it just depends on how much freedom and flexibility you want to give yourself in your off seasons as well, which is why I like off seasons because I do get to live like a normal person.
Yeah. And anything about two of those numbers that you shared, that includes muscle that's gained, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
just for you guys to think about too, that I know in your head, you're like, oh my gosh, that body fat swing. But no, like that's muscle
yeah.
too that you're putting on.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So I'm kind of just like, I used to care so much about the scales. And now that I've seen how much my body's changed and I'm now like my heaviest ever, I never thought I'd reach 74 kilos. And I'm actually just, I'm pretty content with where I'm obviously holding a lot more body fat than what I do in prep. But it's just crazy to compare what my mindset used to be like. And it just goes to show how much scale weight doesn't show the muscle that's been built. You know, mm-hmm. you completely change the shape of your physique with more muscle. And what I've noticed from building phase to building phase is you hold body fat a lot better when you've got a foundation of muscle. The more muscle you have, I find you can kind of get away with looking almost, well, for me personally anyway, better in a building phase.
Yes.
Because you've got that muscle underneath. So I think if I was holding this much body fat without the muscle, I'd look so different. You know, I think that's what's allowed me to also get comfortable is knowing like, okay, like I've got this shape regardless.
So good. So I just want to emphasize that because I feel like so many people think, oh, I just want to decrease body fat, just want to decrease body fat. And I'm like, but you could also just build muscle and you'd look more like curvier, you'd look stronger, you'd look more in shape, and you'd have more like freedom in terms of nutrition and everything else. And you could see your metabolism increase from that. Like you'd feel better, like all these benefits from building muscle, and it would still get you the like look that you want.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a conversation I have with a lot of my clients as well. For some reason, it's a female thing. And I used to be the same, like so focused on getting lean. But if you spend the time to build that shape, you know, you're going to be, your energy requirements are so much more. You can eat a lot more. You have more flexibility whilst still being able to be content with what you look like at the same time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Totally agree with that. And it's almost, I don't know if you found, I know I found for me, it's like, oh, I kind of like being like a little curvier.
Absolutely.
Right? And like curvier, like with the muscle too, I feel like it's a good combo. And I feel like people don't realize that's an option. They're like, I just have to be either be skinnier or I'd be fluffier. But it's there's more options than that.
For sure. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, no, I think, I don't know. I think that I struggled a lot in the early parts of competing with building phases, but I think I just had to prove to myself, like, okay, like people talk about not listening to the number on the scales and building this muscle. And I think it's not until you prove that to yourself and you actually see yourself go through it that you're like, okay, like I believe this now. Like this is exactly what everyone was saying. I just needed to do it and put the time in and have the patience.
Do you find that similar with nutrition too, where it's like, oh, I actually needed to eat more and I didn't realize it until I actually did it. Now I'm experiencing the benefits.
Absolutely. I think we tell ourselves a certain story about X amount of calories. I know I used to back in the day, like I cannot go above this amount of calories. But it's not until we actually trust ourselves, trust our coach, trust the process. It's like, wow, I can eat a lot more than what I thought I could.
And it's so much more fun that way.
It really is.
Okay. So let's talk about, we talked about on season and off season as it pertains to like prepping for a show. Let's kind of get into the nitty gritty of the training in nutrition. Let's start with training. Mm-hmm. So what does training look like? And we can talk about it in terms of off season and then in on season to if we need to.
Mm-hmm. So training for me doesn't change much like on season to off season. It's like how you build a muscle is how you retain it type thing. So mm-hmm. I go through different phases with my training just depending on what I'm trying to work on or focus on in that period of time. I think the more advanced I've become with lifting, the less I've done training wise. So my volume has dropped, my intensity has increased, and it's more so like quality over quantity. Whereas I think when I was still building skill acquisition, I was still, I guess, a newbie in the gym, it was a lot more volume because I wasn't getting as many effective reps each set because I wasn't training as hard. So it's changed over the years, but these days it's very minimal. I usually only do like 4 exercises for my sessions, 2 to 3 sets, and they're always taken to failure. That's currently how I've been training for some time, and it's been working the best for me because I'm not in the gym doing junk volume and having all these sets to do and you know, not really getting much out of it, which I see a lot of people in the gym doing.
Mm-hmm.
So in saying that, I mean, a lot of my clients don't train that way because they simply haven't been able to build up enough skill acquisition. They aren't comfortable training to failure yet. In those cases, I think you do need more volume because you're, I guess, not getting as many effective reps per set. Mm-hmm. So you need to have that little bit more work.
So what is maybe an indication that you have the skill down? And you are like improving in that and you are getting more effective reps. Like, do you have maybe a specific exercise or a specific example with specific like quantifiable numbers, maybe sets and reps or anything like that?
I think that you can usually tell if you're confident going heavy on a particular exercise and getting very close to failure at around 4 to 6 reps. If you can comfortably do that while still maintaining your form, technique, tempo, I think that's like a big green tick that you've got the skill acquisition for that movement.
Mm-hmm.
So once you can do that and confidently gauge how many reps you have left in the tank at the end of each set, I think that's when you're ready to drop the amount of working sets you're doing and just focus on like quality sets, hard sets to failure. It's definitely not the only way to train. I mean, there's so many different ways to train, but it's personally what I've found works best for me.
And from what I've seen, most of the top people are doing this. When I say top people, like very fit and shape people who are prioritizing building muscle in a like mm-hmm. scientific way are doing it absolutely. This way. I feel like this is kind of where I'm at with my training. I know we've talked about it. Like, this is where like I feel like I'm very comfortable with the 3-4 sets, mm-hmm. right? And have a grasp on failure, right? And going heavy, but going to failure and really getting specific with weight selection, that is like fine tuning, kind of going to that next step. So the other thing too, that shows up for me, which I don't know if you have a thought on, is like the mind muscle connection. There's been years where I'm like, oh, I want to grow my glutes. And I am just not firing my mm-hmm. glutes. I'm like pushing, I'm using like every other muscle and maybe, of course, some, but it's like I'm really not engaging or going slow enough, right? Coming from a CrossFit background, like going slow enough to really focus on the muscle at hand. Mm-hmm. And then also like tracking weights, right? And knowing what weights I'm using and kind of like you said too, of knowing, like having an understanding of how close you are to failure, like how much do you have left in the tank? I see so many ladies, like I was at home the other week working out with my friend and she was just like, doing bicep curls and just, yeah, just, I use these same weights. That's all I have. I've used it for months. And she's like talking to me why she's doing it and then just like drops and moves to the next one. And she's like, I don't understand why I'm not progressing. And I'm like, well, you're not progressing in the actual weight. And I think that it's like, that's that next level.
Absolutely.
So anyway, going back to the question of just what you're training looks like. Mm-hmm. So around to working sets, mm-hmm. and going to failure. Let's talk about going to failure, yeah. for a second.
So I truly believe that to get good and confident in training to failure, you need to train with somebody that is better than you, more advanced than you, and is kind of a bit of a psycho when they train. I've found that is actually how I've been able to get a completely different perspective on truly what is failure. Because sometimes we get in our own head and we're like, that hurts, that's failure, I'm done. Mm-hmm. But it's not until you are truly pushed to your absolute like max by somebody else that you remember that sensation, and you compare when you're training alone to when you took those sets to true failure with that person, you compare. And I think that's how you can get confident. Also by utilizing machines, I don't think that you should start on exercises that are like a lot harder to take to failure, or you probably shouldn't take to failure.
Like deadlifts,
barbell squats. I never take those exercises to failure just because there's like so much injury risk and it's pretty much impossible. So I think starting on like safe machines and just really, what do you have to lose by going for an extra rep? You just don't get the rep on mm-hmm. a machine. So I think that that's a good place to start, just like challenging yourself, being around people that train harder than you. In saying that, like I've met so many people that simply just don't enjoy training to failure. And I don't think that necessarily means like you can't build muscle. It just means that you have to be smart with your training, you know, add more volume, add more sets, and, you know, work around what you enjoy. I think that's important too. A lot of my clients don't enjoy training to failure or training super, super hard like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's important that you like, that you work around those things, because there's, as I said, so many ways to train and get the stimulus. So, yeah.
So that's really helpful. And I want to talk about too, like the intensity and how you feel after training.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any indication you have of after training of like, yeah, that was 100% for me, or anything like that, that feedback?
I tend to not look at my session as a whole, because mentally, like psychologically, I kind of talk myself out of it, and I don't want to look at it as like a workout as such. I kind of look at every single set as its own set, and I always have the mindset of I'm here to respect every rep that I do. So my focus is always on the first set. I'm not thinking about all the other sets I have to do, not thinking about the last set. I'm like, this set I need to optimize, and that's where all my focus goes. So in terms of like, a lot of people rate their intensity as the session as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's where some people get kind of caught up in the whole like rushing their rest periods and treating it like a workout or exercise, when training is more so like a skill, and it's about the sets that you do. It's like you need to focus on those given sets and making sure that they're where they need to be, if that makes sense. So at the end of the session, I'm usually dead if it's been a good session. Sometimes I'm not though. Like if I'm doing, say, like an isolated like shoulder and back workout, like I might not even be breaking a sweat, but I can be sure that I've, I guess, gone to failure or very close to failure on the working sets that I have done.
Mm-hmm.
also depends on like if I'm doing a lot of like taxing exercises like squats and heavy lifting, that's usually when I'll feel overall just really fatigued in comparison to if I was to go in and do like an isolated sort of session.
Yeah.
So, yeah, always I think that it's important you don't like look at training as exercise a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And like rest periods as well. A lot of people fixate themselves on like sticking to that like certain period of time, whereas for me personally, I just have as long as I need until I feel alive again and I can focus on my next set. Sometimes that's like 2-3 minutes. Because, yeah, if you're rushing your rest periods, you're not going to be able to optimize those working sets.
So this concept of – it's almost like, I don't know, one rep at a time, or like you're only focused on what that one rep or that one set, like that concept is such like a mental shift. That's definitely going to be a big takeaway for me. I like that a lot. So – okay. Anything else on training that you think would be beneficial before we talk about your nutrition? And I think we didn't say this at the beginning, but as far as the type of training you're doing, correct me if I'm wrong, progressive overload training where you're using a combination of machines, maybe some dumbbells, cables, and maybe some barbell work.
Yeah, pretty much. Obviously for like muscle growth and hypertrophy, optimal would be machines isolated where we have the most stability really. So dumbbells and barbells, there's some exercises you can obviously get a decent amount of stability, but like overall you're kind of looking at more machines and more stability to focus on like hypertrophy specifically.
Mm-hmm.
I personally feel like I'm a power lifter at heart though. So I'm constantly going off plan and doing like a lot of like heavy barbell squats and things like that, which I think are good in like the first few years of lifting because they're going to be building like a solid foundation and base anyway, which kind of pays off in the long run. But these days, probably not the best option for me, but mm-hmm. I still love it. I always say if I didn't compete, I'd do powerlifting for sure.
I've heard that a lot of ladies might do that in their off season. Maybe this is more at the amateur level, like well, in their off season, we'll do powerlifting because it's so like glute focused too.
Yeah, for sure. And I think because you're a lot stronger and you're eating more and you kind of still want to focus on like a competitive goal.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think too, kind of going back to like, what do you enjoy in skill acquisition? Because I know some ladies will be like, oh my gosh, I need to do all machines. And it's, and I know I've been in this place before where then I go in the workout and I do that. But every workout, I'm like, it's like I'm learning a new machine and how to execute it, which is mm-hmm. mentally taxing. Mm-hmm. And then I'm missing having fun and like feeling like I'm quote good at something. And so then I'm like, okay, well, I kind of want that, you know, RDL, and because I love those and I like already have like my form down and it like, feels good. I'm progressing there. So I feel like that can be a part of someone's journey too.
Absolutely. I think we all get attached to certain exercises, like what we're good at, we usually want to do more of,
mm-hmm.
Which isn't always a bad thing because a lot of the time, like progressions in your early days of lifting, it's more like, I like to call it like a self-belief progression. It's not like true adaptation to the exercise. It's like, I'm just getting better at this exercise. And then the true progressions start to come. So I think if you're confident in a movement and it's obviously an effective movement, like stick to it. There's some movements I've been doing or have been in my program for like years and I haven't changed them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still progressing. I'm still able to overload. I've got great skill acquisition. So I think it's more so, if anything, just changing like the variation of like RDL or variation of squat. For me anyway.
So let's talk about that. And that might be like the last training question. So how long are you on like a training program, until you're switching the exercises, or maybe it is you're thinking about it exercise by exercise until you know, hit a plateau, let's say, until you change exercise. What does that look like?
So usually, personally for me, I'll do 12 weeks of the same program.
Okay.
Often I'll extend it if I'm not plateauing and I'm still progressing, or I might just make like a few adjustments. So it might just be like a few exercises that I've been plateauing on or that I'm not enjoying or I feel like isn't effective anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Often it's not like a complete change in the whole program. But then everyone's different again. I think a lot of people get bored. That's a big thing with programming that goes for a long period of time. And in that case, I've got a few clients like that, and I will change their program like every sort of 6 to 8 weeks, but it's more so changing the tempo, changing the exercise order, making it different but the same.
So really it's just for like their mental adherence versus the actual what would be most beneficial.
Yeah, pretty much. I think in terms of like beneficial or what's most optimal, it's like the longer you can stay on the same program and continue progressing, the better, because those exercises are what you're going to have the most skill acquisition in.
Such a good point.
So if you can embrace the boredom, I think it's always going to be the best outcome.
And just in case anyone's unsure, or even we can talk about the different things that I see with this. Monday is leg day, right? And then, or I know like Aaron right now, he's doing this, like, it's like an 8-day cycle. So it's like every day, it's not like the same thing every week, because day 8 might fall on Tuesday, or last week it fell on Sunday. What does yours look like, or what do you typically program for?
At the moment, it always changes, to be honest, but at the moment I'm doing an upper day, which is solely just back and delts. So I don't train like any other muscle group, just because they're really already, they get indirectly hit in like usually back anyway, like my biceps and triceps, and you don't really want overdeveloped arms for like my situation for competing. So yeah, I'll do an upper day, a lower day, a rest day, and then repeat. So upper, lower, rest, repeat. That's currently what I'm doing. So it kind of falls on different days. And then I've done like splits where it's 3 lower, 2 upper. I'm just finding at the moment, recovery wise, I need like a minimum of 2 days between leg days. I've done closer together in the past, and I just find like my recovery, I just can't recover from it. So lower body is definitely a focus point for me at the moment. Upper body is more so like maintenance.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. That's helpful. I have found that, and a lot of my ladies are very like type A, corporate, like got a schedule. And my coach tried to put me on rotating days, and I was like, I do not like this, just from like the mental aspect of not having like a schedule where I was training, like, okay, I'm training these days, I'm not training these days. And I also, to be honest, I like do yoga and dance class and surfing and like had all these other things. But it's interesting, again, talking about like there's levels to this shit, right? If you want to prioritize it more and get better results, then that has to be more of the priority of what's going to be best for recovery and training. But then also like applying it to life if you're not at that level.
For sure.
That too.
I think, I've got a few clients like that. I've been like that in the past as well, having to like, I like to structure my weeks out so I don't have to be in that cycle of training. But usually like 5-day splits is like my maximum when I'm going on like a weekly basis. I think that a lot of people don't need any more than 4. And I think a lot of people can get away with 3, especially if they're like training is quality. I think like the more you train, if you're not recovering, this is something I had to learn the hard way as well, because I always used to think like more is more. And a lot of the time it's just not the way, because we don't grow in the gym. We grow when we're recovering. So I think a lot of people sort of like they stay the same simply because they're just not recovering from their sessions. It's not that they're not training hard enough. It's just that they're not recovering. So that's something that in recent years I've had to really prioritize. Because obviously the harder you train, the more time it takes to recover from those sessions as well. So people that train 6-7 days a week, it's like they're just half of it, if not more. It's like just going to waste because they're not recovering.
So outside of nutrition, what other aspects of recovery do you focus on?
So I currently, I'm doing sauna and ice bath. That's a new thing for me. Mm-hmm. You are my motivation for the ice bath. So, yeah, I'll do that either before my sessions or on my rest days because, yeah, it's not good to do like straight after your sessions.
Yep.
Recovery-wise, like sleep's been a big priority for me, like quality sleep. I always got 8 hours, but it was – I've only recently found out I snore and and it's just not deep sleep. So I was waking up really tired and fatigued, and so focusing on that has helped a lot. I actually get 9 hours at the moment, and I find any less than that, I'm tired. Yep. And I've just had to accept that I need more sleep. I think it's just with training and all that kind of thing as well. So, yeah, sleep's a big one. Not going too hard on the cardio, which I'm not at the moment anyway, but that's a big thing for a lot of people is they're like fatiguing themselves even more doing all this extra cardio and not being able to recover from that. So it's just basics, really, nutrition, like making sure for me at the moment anyway, it's like protein is the focus. I'm in a surplus for the most part. So mm-hmm. it's like I'm pretty flexible with like just being in a calorie range rather than like a set amount of calories. And that's pretty much it.
So let's talk about more about nutrition then. This perfect segue. So surplus, if you guys aren't familiar, meaning you're eating more than you're burning per day, hence the word surplus. And so you're focused on protein and then a calorie range, which gives you some more flexibility. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about your nutrition now and versus maybe when you're on season or during the prep for a show. Mm-hmm. So anything else that you're doing now with your nutrition to just make sure you're getting enough nutrients to build muscle and really optimize that?
So I think it's going to be different for everyone. For me personally, because I've done flexible dieting and for so long, it's to go out and eat out. It's very easy to guesstimate. It's easy. It's just natural for me. Whereas mm-hmm. I think you need to spend time learning nutrition and practicing all these things for like quite a few years before you get to a point where you can almost become an informed eater, potentially not even need to use MyFitnessPal. A lot of the time in my off seasons, I don't because I know that I'm within a calorie range mm-hmm. and I know that I'm within a protein range. So I spend a lot of time in my off seasons being more of an informed eater. Not to confuse that with intuitive eating, just eating like what yeah. I think is good. It's more so like based on knowledge and so many years of tracking. So
I'm a huge fan of that word. That's the first time I've heard it. And this is what I'm all about, like informed eating. Like don't be tied to the app. Let the app tell you what to do in your lifestyle phase or your off season. Like just use your brain because you understand it to be able to make decisions and guesstimate. Like it's so Absolutely. Good because then you are loosely hitting your macros, right? You are technically doing it without having to track.
It's on the app. Yeah.
So good. I love the term informed Absolutely. Eating. I'm going to start using that.
yeah. But I guess it takes time to get to that point. You have to go through those like stricter tracking on the app phases to then be able to step away and walk into a supermarket or walk into a restaurant and go like, okay, like that's roughly got that many carbs, that much protein, that much fat. And it's not even that you have to track it all in your head. Eventually you just kind of, you know, find something that works for you, whether that be like guidelines of like 4 meals a day or 5 meals a day and having a protein serving in all of those meals that you know is roughly 30 to 40 grams,
mm-hmm.
Having a carb source, having a fat source. You kind of just learn as the years go on. Not all competitors do that. Like I know a lot that are very strict and rigid even in their off seasons. But for me, I don't enjoy it and I'm not going to force myself to do something that I can't maintain over the long run.
Yep.
So I definitely go through stricter phases in my off seasons, but for the most part I kind of do prioritize like social outings and not saying no to friends and things that I always have to do in prep.
Yep.
Because I know that for me anyway, it's such a long-term thing of competing and so many preps where I do have to miss out on like Christmas and birthdays and all that kind of thing. I just tend to have that little bit more flexibility.
So does that go – because we were talking a lot about quantity of food, which I hope everyone is picking up on. Like, that's the what's most important to build muscle and to build your shape. But as far as quality of food, how do you approach that during the off season?
So early days, I was actually like a full on flexible dieter. This is when I kind of didn't prioritize the health side of nutrition. Mm-hmm. And I was more so just like numbers, numbers, numbers. These days though, I suppose I prioritize more like the digestive side of things and health more than I used to.
Yep.
So I try and sort of stick to like 80-20, 80% whole foods, 20% fun foods or soul foods. And that's just, that works for most people, I would say, just overall. In preps though themselves, like it's different. I'm usually on a meal plan. Like, I'm very, like, same thing every day. There's no flexible dieting involved, not in recent preps anyway, just because there's so many different variables at play when you start to do the whole flexible dieting thing, which is fine if you don't have a time-specific goal.
Mm-hmm.
But for preps, I kind of just prefer to keep it very structured. And that's why it's always a short-term thing, because it's not realistic to stick to a meal plan forever.
Yeah. In that meal plan, go on – during on season or when you're prepping for a show, it's going to be at a calorie deficit.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have just to give an idea, obviously everyone is going to be different in terms mm-hmm. of their calories and what they need.
Mm-hmm.
But would you say, like, is there an off season range that you'd want to share and then an in season range that?
Yeah. So it's changed so dramatically over the years, because obviously with more muscle mass, more energy requirements, like, they go up, which mm-hmm. is an awesome thing. So usually in preps, it'll depend on the time frame of how long I need to lose X amount of weight before like a show, but typically it'll range between like 1,300 to 1,500 for my cutting phases.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes a little bit lower in like deplete weeks, sometimes a little bit higher in like leading into the show when I'm carbing up. But typically, like, the fat loss process is between those numbers for me.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, though, it was probably like more so like a fat between 1,000 and 1,200, I'd say, like, my first show. And that was a long prep, but I had no muscle back yeah. then either. Sounds gotcha. Extreme, but as I say, it is extreme sometimes. It's like getting to those low body fat levels, it's like not only is it like hard dieting, it has an impact on health for sure. Like, I lose my period every prep mm-hmm. for at least 4 months, sometimes longer.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, yeah, the calories, they can get extreme for competitors in terms of like what they, the numbers they have to go to, but it's like they're not trying to achieve a sustainable, you know, thing. It's a very short term for a goal. And that's just how it is.
Yeah.
The unsexy truth.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's good. I think people need to know that. And then as far as off season, but just to show the difference of like the calorie deficit versus a surplus,
mm-hmm.
what range would calories go to?
So for me personally, 3,000 is usually what I like to get up to in my off seasons. Well, this one anyway. Which would have just scared the absolute shit out of me back in the day.
Yeah.
But now it's like almost, it feels like I could eat more, to be honest. So, yeah, 3,000, I'd probably say like on average between like at the moment 2,500 to 3,000, just depending on the day. So, yeah, that's like off-season calories. If I was to weigh less at the moment, it'd obviously be a little bit lower.
Yeah.
But at the moment, because of my weight and the muscle I've put on, it's like my energy requirements are pretty high, which yeah. I love.
Yeah. Build it up. I'm all for eating more. So is there anything else that we didn't cover maybe in terms of in prep or when you're in the dieting phase when it comes to your nutrition that you think would be helpful to share or any other insights?
I don't think so. I think that, yeah, like we kind of spoke about how it's not really a normal fat loss phase in terms of like habits that you want to build and things like that in like a typical lifestyle fat loss phase.
Yeah.
It's kind of like you're probably going to become pretty food focused. You're probably, most competitors do just like have some kind of issue with food or something that isn't healthy in the process. I know that's definitely been the case for me. You tend to just become a lot more food focused and, you know, it gets better as time goes on, but it's, yeah, definitely something that I guess I like to be honest about because it just isn't something that you kind of want to aim towards if you're just trying to be fit and healthy and look good.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I think taking the strategy and applying the strategy, like if you're an everyday athlete and you still want to like build muscle and decrease body fat and look fit and be fit, I think the strategy applies, but to the extreme levels it gets taken, that's when it doesn't get healthy.
Absolutely.
There was one thing I was going to ask or just kind of, I guess, ask on and emphasize is when, again, there's levels to this shit. You could do macros to decrease body fat, but if you're competing, you're going to do everything you can to win. So what's going to get better results? A meal plan, because the meal plan is going to have your set macros, but it's just going to have less variety for error. Mm-hmm. And so I just to kind of emphasize that a meal plan for 5 months doesn't mean that you don't eat it some days and you're like, oh, well, I'm going to this birthday party or I've got this baby shower or we're going on a weekend trip. It means you're on the meal plan every single day, every single meal.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, so I just want to like talk about that for a second because I don't think people get that and don't mm-hmm. get how intense that is and how on top of it you have to be, mm-hmm. right? Because if you have a meeting you have to go to in Denpasar, which traffic here is crazy, and then it takes forever, and then it's like you got to figure out, like your number one thought is like, how can I figure out how to get this meal in, mm-hmm. take it with me, do I prep it ahead of time? Like you have to be so, like think so far in advance and plan in advance. Any examples you have or anything that just can like let people like get the priority it takes?
I guess it's the first priority always. When it's prep, it's like that is the first priority. And when we talk about balance, it's like there is no balance because your first priority is prep and then everything kind of just comes after that, which can be really hard. You know, you have to have a very supportive, like if you have a partner, family, like people that understand the process because it does take a toll, not just on you, but the people around you as well.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the nutrition side of things, it's just a preparation thing. It's like there's no plan B. You can't wing it. You don't get anxious before you have outings and things like that because you just know there's no other option other than to bring a meal.
Yep.
Eat out of Tupperware if you have to. Like, I think that you just don't have the choice, or that's the best. Well, that's the mindset you need in prep anyway. It's like you can't, you just don't have another option.
It's non-negotiable.
It's non-negotiable.
And then when it's non-negotiable, you always figure out how to achieve it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, you have to give up a lot, sacrifice a lot, social events, all that kind of thing. Holidays, you have to, if you're going to go on a holiday, it has to be so well thought out, you know, on top of everything else you have to plan. You have to also be making sure that nutrition can be 100% as well. So yeah, I turn into a little bit of a hermit in preps. I try and go out for more so like coffee dates or just walking to get my steps in. It's like dinners and things like that are just not on the table, unfortunately.
Yeah. But have you found that has that opened your eyes to like, oh, there's more, like more to life or more? I did a health, this was not prep related, but it was gut health related and I had to be on a meal plan for like 8 months. It hit me like the social aspects were really hard.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Utah at the time and they're very like fitness culture. They don't drink and like all of that. And I found that it really opened my eyes to like, oh my gosh, there's so much to do where drinking and eating isn't the main focus.
Mm-hmm.
And like going, like there's hiking there or went bowling or I was like, oh my gosh, there's so much more to do that I would have never even considered. And so it kind of opened my eyes. I don't know if you experienced that at all when you're in prep or haven't.
Yeah, for sure. I always try and think outside the box in terms of like how I'm going to set myself up for social events and try and plan things with friends that isn't like around food.
Mm-hmm.
In saying that, it can also be hard, like, because if it's a few hours out, you kind of still have to bring your meal and that sort of thing. So, but yeah, I think that's the biggest tip, I guess, for meals and I guess socializing in prep is like trying to make it not around food.
Yeah.
Which is like culturally not normal because yes. A lot of social outings are just food, you know, around food. But yeah, it's just the way it is in prep.
So since we're talking about struggles, something that I wanted to ask you is what are some of the biggest struggles when it comes to like being in the sport at this level?
Biggest struggles. I think it's one of those things you have to love it. You have to love the struggle. So I always say like it's a privilege to be able to compete and it's a choice as well. So although there are a lot of like sacrifices and hard things about it, I always try and look at it in a light of like I choose this, I get to do this because if you're constantly like playing victim, which some people do in prep and competing, it's like, is it for you? Because you kind of just have to love the hard bits. So I kind of see them as good bits now anyway, because you have to if you're going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
Is that your question?
That was definitely it. And I will say, when I see a competitor and just even following your stories, right, is so inspiring because I know when you go in and train, and now that we've talked about it, like you go and train, like you're taking it serious. You're going 100%. And yes, at the end of the day, we can look at your shape and be like, oh my gosh, you have an amazing shape. But I immediately, when I see people like you, I'm like, they're badass. They're like mentally so tough. Like it just shows so much about like your character and the people who do this, their character. They're just complete badasses. So I almost feel like it's like the struggle almost comes with pride too, mm-hmm. because maybe less than 1% of the world can do like what you and like what you all are doing, which I feel like is so badass.
Yeah, for sure. I think so. I think a lot of the time it's like, personality is such a big thing with what we choose in anything in life, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And I think competing in particular, it's like you kind of just have to have a little bit of, I don't know how to explain it, like a bit of like grit, like you kind of just have to have that like competitive nature for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I think that has to be a strong like why and like why you compete. It's like, I compete to win. I compete because I'm competitive, you know, and you kind of just have to have that mindset, I think, to push through like the hard times for sure.
Awesome. So this has been so good. I think some people submitted some questions, but I think we covered them all. Someone asked about like how clean do you need to eat to look like this? And they were referring to the photo that I shared of you when you were like stage ready. So hopefully you understand now that she's on meal plan and it's not just the cleanness of it. It's like way more goes into it than just that. Someone else asked about just what your training intensity looks like. And you've talked about that in detail. And then everything else I think we covered. The only thing that I feel like we may want to give like a warning about where I see a lot of people see people online, whether they're competitors or just fitness influencers, and they don't know that they're in the world, it's very common to be enhanced with something that's helping them to create the shape. It does not mean that they're not putting in effort by any means, but I think it can be hard if you're just unaware that that's a thing and then you're comparing yourself to that, or you're like, I'm following the same program she's doing and I don't look like that. What's wrong with me? Absolutely. Is there anything that you want to share on that topic?
For sure. I think that social media can be a funny thing sometimes. I always say like don't compare in general, but when you're comparing yourself to somebody that is a competitor and potentially or most likely is like on some kind of performance enhancing drugs, it's an unfair comparison and it's a big part of the sport, for sure. And even outside of the sport as well, you know, there's people that just take their physique seriously and they go down that route. So I think more than anything, it's important to be aware that that is out there. Mm-hmm. And it's not just a few, it's the majority. And you just, I guess, have to keep in mind that for a natural female to build muscle, it's a very slow process. And if you're comparing that to somebody on anabolics, it's just not comparable because, mm-hmm. you know, they're obviously going to be able to recover a lot quicker and build muscle a lot quicker than somebody that's natural can. So I think that more so just an awareness of it's part of the game, you know, and to not compare yourself to somebody else's journey, especially online. It's, you know, it's crazy.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I saw like last week someone's advertising their, it's not even related to fitness, but now they've added some fitness where it's like, do this 20-minute workout and look like me. And I'm like, well, I think there's more to it than that. And I, you know, we obviously know that from the years of what else you've shared. But again, it comes back to that like education and awareness. And that's one reason why I wanted to bring you on, just so we can talk about just actually what it takes and some of the science behind it. So thank you so much for sharing all of your knowledge and giving us a little inside scoop of what that world looks like. Where can people follow you on Instagram? Where can they learn more about you, or if they want to work with you, give us all the deets.
So Instagram, Fit Spice Bridge, I think that's my main platform, to be honest. I'm not really on Facebook or TikTok or anything like that. And then all my links are on Instagram, so you can find me
Fit
there.
Fit Spice Bridge.
Yes. I was obsessed with the Spice Girls when I was younger.
Weren't we all?
And that name came before I started anything online, to be honest. And I haven't changed it.
It's good. And especially with the Beckham Netflix series, I just watched it and it sent me down a whole Victoria Beckham world thing. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
All right, you guys. See you next week on the Create Your Shape podcast.
Hey, if you work out and want to look like you work out, then you need to be in the Create Your Shape program. Learn more and get started at jennythenutritionist.com/create-your-shape. You can also follow me on Instagram for more content at jennythenutritionist.